It's exciting stuff, isn't it? Let's pray. Now, Father, please take us back. Help us to see what happened, what you've recorded for us, what your Spirit has preserved for us. And as we read and hear, make us eager to listen and quick to consider ourselves and your word to us and to obey. And we pray that for Jesus' sake. Amen. I would really like to be like my grandfather. He died some years ago now and left my grandmother a widow. She was a practical, determined lady. She was pretty savvy when it comes to reading people and situations and giving advice and dealing with people. But it was pretty tough for her after my granddad died. It's hard for me too. I admired him tremendously. In many ways, I'd like to be just like him. I miss him. So did a lot of people who knew him. He was an ideas man, my grandfather, and he could make his ideas happen. He was a mover and a shaker. You've probably heard of him. His name was Nebuchadnezzar. He was enormously, unbelievably clever and creative and powerful. Powerful and glorious, splendid, frightening. He really knew how to deal with people. I mean, deal with people. All the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to be put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to humble, he humbled. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. He was a machine, my grandfather. The ultimate governing and ruling machine. Nebuchadnezzar promised to make Babylon great again. And he did it. He was like a raging, unassailable lion, a majestic lion. The main man, I like to call him. He swallowed up other little nations, like a ravenous predator. Maybe that's why we've adopted the lion as our symbol in Babylon. Babylon the Great. Babylon the Magnificent, Babylon the Destroyer, and now Belshazzar's Babylon, my Babylon, brilliant, beautiful, brash, bold, brutal Babylon. That's my new motto. He was an architect. He was a planner, a visionary, all wrapped up in a package of furious strength and unimaginable authority. His palace, 7 stories high, beside the Euphrates River, had the most spectacular rooftop hanging gardens. He built them for my grandmother, his wife, who was a country girl and had come into the city, and he thought he'd help her to grow used to the city by giving her some beautiful gardens, make her feel at home. No wonder the entire population fell down and worshipped his statue, this gargantuan statue, 27 metres high. He was like a god. And if anyone was in any doubt about that, I guess the threat of being thrown into a fiery furnace might have assisted them to make up their minds. But you know, much as I admired him, and much as so many others admired him and even worshipped him, I have to say he had a flaw in his personality. Actually, a fatal flaw, I'd call it. He was incredibly powerful and successful, impregnable. Although not quite impregnable. Nebuchadnezzar had a chink in his armour, you might say. In fact, he had 2 chinks in his armour, 2 shortcomings, 2 serious weaknesses, not just one. His first flaw was one of those things people don't like to talk about, especially successful people and leaders. One of those little peccadilloes that we like to sweep under the carpet and not make public. Keep it within the family, you know. It was a bit of an embarrassment to us, to the family, as you can imagine. He had a mental health challenge. Tendency, in fact, quite a tendency, quite a strong tendency to a pretty bizarre mental illness. For 7 years, he just went into some kind of fog. He was on another plane. Absolutely insane. And completely delusional. He admitted it later himself. Off with the fairies. Entirely. You should have seen the awful, vacant, wild, hollow look in his eyes. It wasn't human at all. And it wasn't just his mind that went. You wouldn't believe this. He more or less turned into some kind of animal. Just bizarre. His hair grew long and lush, like the feathers of an eagle, except that it was thick and tangled and greasy and gross, full of filth and burrs and seeds and sticks. His fingernails and toenails became longer and sharper until they looked like the long, sharp talons on a bird, like a vulture. He stopped eating food, proper food, and started roaming around on all fours through the royal farms, munching grass all day long. When his family tried to talk to him, all they got was, and manky is an understatement. You could smell him from the opposite end of the corridor. You had to watch his step around the palace grounds, steaming manpats left on the ground all over the place. Then he left his bedroom altogether and went to sleep outside with the animals. Even when he was finally thrown out of the palace, he didn't seem to mind. He went off into the fields, salivating like a dog or a cow, dribbling at the mouth. Was he possessed by some evil spirit? No one knew. He actually thought he was a bull. If physicians or medical people in the future investigate this sort of thing, perhaps they'd give it a name like monomania, some obsessive, weird, pathological preoccupation with one thing. Holy cow. And amidst all these strange goings on, one of the most extraordinary things of all was that an Israelite captive called Daniel predicted all this before it happened. My grandfather renamed Daniel Belteshazzar. He named him after the Babylonian god Bel, because his Hebrew name, Daniel, means God is my judge. And I think Nebuchadnezzar found that a bit provocative, a bit uncomfortable, a bit of a poke in the eye. But I prefer to call him Daniel, because Belteshazzar sounds too much like my name, Belshazzar. Anyway, Daniel was a high-ranking, high-achieving public servant under Nebuchadnezzar, and he'd predicted that exactly this would happen after the king had told him about a disturbing dream that he'd had. Now, you know as well as I do that the Israelites are just a lame bunch of losers. Quirky, displaced, self-flagellating refugees who persist decade after decade with that pathetic Yahweh, the God of Israel stuff. A make-believe God who's so powerless that he can't even lift a finger to help his stupid conquered people. They're still going on with that stuff now, decades later. But I've got to say that this Daniel was something else. And he was even spot on with his timing. He said it would be 7 years that the king's mind would turn into the mind of an animal. And it was right on 7 years until he stopped his absurd behaviour, stopped eating grass, cut his hair, had a serious manicure and pedicure, got dressed, that was a mercy, put his brain back into gear, and started ruling once again. Well, that was Nebuchadnezzar's first great flaw, mental illness. Man, I'm glad it doesn't run in the family. It took 7 years, 7 lost years, gone, whooshka, just like that, out of his life. But at least he finally got over it and became great again. But his second problem, the other one I said I'd tell you about, was even worse in a way, more destructive. For a mighty king, even more shameful, if that were possible. His fatal flaw was this. Despite all his power and magnificence, Nebuchadnezzar was a weakling. He often had trouble sleeping, I'm told, and complained of nightmares. And one night, he had a dream that really rattled him, about an enormous tree that reached to the sky and grew abundant food for all the animals and people in the world around him. Then some messenger of the gods came, cut the tree down, and left the stump. But in that strange way that things get mixed up in dreams, the stump was a man, and it turned out to be Nebuchadnezzar himself. And he, the stump man, was sent away from civilization and lived like a wild, mindless animal for 7 years. At that point, Nebuchadnezzar made a bad call. That was when he asked Daniel to interpret the dream for him. And Daniel said he was going to lose his kingdom and half turn into a wild animal. I think silver-tongued Daniel was probably so persuasive that the king talked himself into it and slowly went mad. 12 months later, he put himself out to pasture. But worse than that, when he regained his senses 7 years later, he capitulated to Daniel's pathetic, pitiful Israelite god, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. He must have been so worried about going mad again that he hedged his bets and praised Daniel's god. What a weakling. What a spineless, puny response from a world ruler. As if that weak God of Israel had caused his mental illness and then restored him and given his greatness and glory back to him. He believed that. Apparently the king said, God does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of the earth. As if that God controls human history. Humans control history, not some invisible God. Nebuchadnezzar even went so far as to call him King of Heaven. You know, I think he actually believed in that God and gave glory to him and took on some attitude of humility towards him. He thought the Israelite God was sovereign over all the kingdoms of the earth. What an embarrassment for Babylon. What a coward. What an admission of impotence. It makes me so angry when I think about it. The king with the fatal flaw. But never mind, that was a long time ago. Fortunately, we've moved on. No God fear is left here. Now Babylon is proud and great once again, invincible under my impeccable leadership. Magnificent Babylon. Well, I decided that I'd put on a great feast. If there's something we do well in Babylon, it's celebrations, food, feasting. My army of kitchen slaves worked for weeks to prepare the food and the decorations. You should have seen my palace banqueting hall earlier this evening. What a spectacle. What a night. 1,000 of my nobles, all my wives, all my concubines, all their meal place settings sparkling and gleaming in the radiant glow of the massive ornate royal lampstand reflected off the shimmering glossy plaster walls. And all of them eating the exquisite, choicest produce of the finest kingdom in the world, alcohol flowing like rivers until they could drink no more. Well, while I was downing my first cup of wine, a really ingenious thought occurred to me. Pottery cups are all right, but I love drinking from gold, don't you? Pottery's a bit like polystyrene. So I called some servants and commanded them to fetch the golden goblets that my grandfather Nebuchadnezzar had brazenly taken from the God Temple in Jerusalem all those years ago, the top products of those legendary skilled Israelite goldsmiths of days gone by. The gold cups looked superb on our tables. They really set off the gleaming plates. But it was more than just the aesthetics I was thinking about. We were making a statement. As my nobles, my wives, my concubines and I lifted those sacred Israelite God vessels to our lips and toasted the fine idols all around the walls of the banquet hall, we drank to our Babylonian gods. Do you like it? You get my point? If you arrive at your office one morning and find that your desk and your chair and your scroll cabinet and your writing tablet and your papyrus wall hangings and all your little household idols all in a pile, out the door, in the colonnade, outside your office. You know what's going on, don't you? It's not that you're, not just that your stuff is out. You're out. You're gone. See you later, alligator. And that's exactly what I wanted to get across. You show contempt from the stuff from that Israelite God's temple. You show contempt for God himself. That was my point. Up your nose with a rubber hose, Yahweh. The sweet taste of lavish blasphemy as we gloried in our contempt of that powerless, mean-spirited, invisible God of the Israelites. Gold. Only the best is good enough for Babylon, and the best only just. Can you imagine if there was some way of sending images of all that magnificent cuisine? Maybe in some future age when Babylon is even greater. Maybe, imagine if those images could be sent instantly through the whole world to make known the richness of our kingdom and the splendour of my achievements, to impress our allies and to tantalise and demoralise our enemies wherever they are. Ha! That's just one of my little flights of fancy. But it's not such a bad idea, is it? Perhaps I should get my magicians and enchanters onto that one. Well, there we were, having a raucous celebration, when suddenly the strangest thing happened. I think it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. Every eye in the palace hall saw it at the same moment. Something that looked like a human hand. Just a hand. It just appeared and started writing on the plaster of the palace wall. Everyone stopped drinking. Even the nobles who were already sloshed. And this mysterious, determined hand just went slowly on, carefully writing, writing, writing. It was just bizarre. Clearly the hand was writing letters and words, but nobody could work out what they meant. I called in my trusty posse of astrologers and magicians, but they were typically useless, a bunch of charlatans. They couldn't even read it, let alone tell me what it meant. Of course, I could tell it had something to do with money, minas, shekels, half shekels. It's just that I'd put away a few goblets of wine and I wasn't thinking as quickly as I usually do. It was a bit of a ruckus. People were shouting. I wasn't scared. Well, I could see some of the nervous Nellies around me were having trouble staying on their feet. Some were even having a struggle keeping their dinner down. And then in came Madam herself. The Queen Mother, the old battle axe. But she is a straight talker. I have to give her that. And sometimes she comes out with random advice, which is occasionally worth listening to. She said, "May the king live forever, blah, 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 blah. What you need, boy, is that old Israelite man, Daniel, the clever one your grandfather used to call up when he needed his enigmas solved, when he got a bit edgy. Remember him? The one who could tell people what their dreams meant. Why don't you give him a go? You look like you could use some help." Well, I found this rather offhand and slightly humiliating, but she said it quietly, and I thought, well, Nebuchadnezzar swore by Daniel, and if he really does have the spirit of the gods in him, it might just be worth a try. And apparently he's a vegetarian, for what that's worth. So I had Daniel wheeled out. He's in his 80s now, you know. And I told him I'd reward him if he could produce the goods. The hand had stopped by this time and vanished. And Daniel walked straight through the crowd, took a good look at the writing, turned around, and opened his mouth to speak. Now, one of my PAs had his clay tablet and stylus there with him, so I told him to pull himself together and take a verbatim record of the speech. Listen to what Daniel said. "Your Majesty, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendour. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. And those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged that the Most High God is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and sets over them everyone he wishes. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this. Instead, you've set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from his temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honour the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Are you joking, Daniel? I, Belshazzar, humble myself before Israel's God? What is this? What kind of moronic, pig-headed, suicidal arrogance would dare to speak like that against me and the great gods Bel and Marduk and all my other gods of gold and silver? Stirrer. Still, I gave Daniel a promotion and a bit of gold bling to shut him up. Why would Daniel even think it could do any good to speak out against the people, against Babylon, to speak out about his lame God to a hostile, all-powerful government and its ruler? What effect could Daniel or anyone hope to have on me and my government and the tide of human history? It's like standing in the Euphrates River and telling it to stop flowing and dry up. Babylon and Belshazzar, winners. Daniel and his shrill, piping, complaining God, losers. As if I would lose my nerve and cave in like my anxious grandfather Nebuchadnezzar did when the going got tough. What a nonsense for these God worshippers to think they have anything relevant to say to modern society, or that anyone would be interested to listen. They're just stuck in the past. Why don't they shut up and realise we live in a modern society, a brave new age where the culture has changed and we've moved on from what God might think? Daniel, God, I don't give a toss about you. I know better than you do about everything. I know better than you do about life and death and life after death. I know better than you do about love and sex and gender and marriage. I know better than you do about the economy. Look at Babylon. I know better than you do about border security, about science, about military superiority, about making money, about trampling on the weak and how to treat refugees and displaced people like those tedious Israelites. Nothing stands against Babylon and Belshazzar. No foreign god, no prophet, no mental illness, no armies, nothing. Babylon will prevail. Listen to that captive Daniel and his dreamed-up fantasies. Listen to this so-called living God who writes obscure secret messages and thinks he knows better than I do. Listen to this cowardly, invisible God who exposes merely his hand but would never dare to show any more than that of himself to the world. Ha, God, I dare you to show yourself. I dare you to show yourself so humans can actually see you, hear you, talk to you, ask you real questions, argue with you. If you ever showed yourself to us, you'd realise how powerful we humans are. Don't you give me an ultimatum. I, Belshazzar, the all-powerful, magnificent ruler of the mightiest nation on earth, acknowledge God and take notice of him. Bow down and worship him, like my weak and flabby grandfather did, over my dead body.